So, good evening. We're continuing in this chapter in the Life Divine called The Cosmic Illusion, Mind, Dream, and Hallucination. The Cosmic Illusion, because whether or not the universe is real is a central question. We presume that our lives have validity, importance, that they may even be crucial to the evolution of the cosmos. But for it to be meaningful, the cosmos must be real, must be a legitimate expression of divine being. Sri Aurobindo has wondered whether it can be usefully compared to a dream, whether dreams tell us something about the nature of the universe or not. And so in our last section, we saw that he was writing about dreams seeming to lack validity compared to waking consciousness in our ordinary life, and hence calling into question whether they could be applicable to the cosmic issue or not. Because first, dreams end. They come to a close, we wake up. Secondly, they are disconnected, often incoherent, seem to have no origination in something which speaks of reality to us, more hallucinatory than connected with waking life. So dream continuity is something that is missing. But he says that if we examine more deeply the nature of dream life, we may come to a different conclusion about it. We need to get to the root of it. And to that end, he is distinguishing still between dream state and waking state. Dreams may end, they may be disconnected, they may be evanescent. And now he wants to call into question whether we can so easily dismiss them. Do they not tell us something about ourselves and about the cosmos? And so the next several pages will be a strong attempt to demonstrate that dreams have substance and speak to universal reality as well as to personal experience. So let's begin. But it may be questioned whether our dreams are indeed totally unreal and without significance, whether they are not a figure, an image record, or a symbolic transcript or representation of things that are real. For that, we have to examine, however summarily, the nature of sleep and of dream phenomena, their process of origination, and their provenance. Or source. What happens in sleep is that our consciousness withdraws from the field of its waking experiences. It is supposed to be resting, suspended, or in abeyance, but that is a superficial view of the matter. So in sleep, the consciousness withdraws itself from its normal field of activities. We equate our waking self with our surface life. So, what is in abeyance is the waking activities. What is at rest is the surface mind and the normal conscious action of the bodily part of us. But the inner consciousness is not suspended. It enters into new inner activities, only a part of which, a part happening or recorded in something of us that is near to the surface, we remember. So he's establishing here a kind of territory of dream life, dream existence, sleep existence. And what reaches into our waking consciousness as a remembered dream is something that is near to the surface. He explains more. There is maintained in sleep, thus near the surface, an obscure subconscious element, which is a receptacle or passage for our dream experiences, and itself also a dream builder. But behind it is the depth and mass of the subliminal, the totality of our concealed inner being and consciousness, which is of quite another order. So two things here. There is a subconscious element. It seems to be an aperture through which dream experiences can pass and become aware in our waking life. But behind that is a subliminal. Now, often these two terms are equated. To Sri Aurobindo, the subconscious is that which is below the line of consciousness. The subliminal is that which is behind the line of consciousness, suggesting that there's not simply a transversal line, but in a sense, another dimension, an inner dimension behind that of which we are aware when we are awake. So it's not simply that our consciousness is waking or not, plunging from the waking into the subconscious, but that consciousness can move behind into, quote, interior realms also. So he goes forward from here. But normally, it is a subconscient part in us, intermediate between consciousness and pure inconscience, that sends up through this surface layer its formations in the shape of dreams, constructions marked by an apparent inconsequence and incoherence. Many of these are fugitive structures built upon circumstances of our present life, selected apparently at random and surrounded with a fantasy of variation. Others call back the past, or rather, selected circumstances and persons of the past as a starting point for similar fleeting edifices. There are other dreams of the subconscious which seem to be pure fantasy without any such initiation or basis. But the new method of psychoanalysis, trying to look for the first time into our dreams with some kind of scientific understanding, has established in them a system of meanings, a key to things in us which need to be known and handled by the waking consciousness. This of itself changes the whole character and value of our dream experience. It begins to look as if there were something real behind it, and as if, too, that something were an element of no mean practical importance. So there's the subliminal behind the line of awareness. There is a subconscient which sends up construct built from the present or the past. But there's another element in which the subconscient sends up sheer fantasy without relation to either. Something of an imaginative flourish that seems to be in that element of consciousness beneath. But we can, even with the initial science of psychoanalysis as it existed back in the late 30s and early 40s, begin to see that dreams have power, have significance, even have sequence. And if we can learn how to decode them, we can learn that they speak to our waking life in ways that are compelling. So he continues, but the subconscious is not our sole dream builder. The subconscious in us is the extreme border of our secret inner existence where it meets the inconscient. It is a degree of our being in which the inconscient struggles into a half-consciousness. The surface physical consciousness also, when it sinks back from the waking level and retrogresses towards the inconscient, retires into this intermediate subconscious. So again, there's an inconscient, to Sri Aurobindo, there is no such thing as an absolute in conscience, but this is where the superconscience and its travel through involution arrives at what seems to be the antithesis or opposite of itself. The inconscious is that which is no longer aware of itself. So this is what is at the base of the cosmos, not even the physical. Physical is far above. The unconscious is something that's quite, quite deep, unfathomable to the waking consciousness. This is a cosmic reality, not simply a personal reality. So between this inconscience and our waking consciousness is what he calls the subconscious. It's kind of a linking world. It is a dream builder, but it's not the only. There are other levels to consider. So this subconscious is a border where the unconscious meets it. The physical can lapse into an inconscient state just like the subconscious can, in drifting down towards, can come into contact with it. So when we go to sleep, we can go in through the physical gate of sleep, and our physical consciousness gravitates towards there. Also, our subconscious in us gravitates towards there as a final resting point. Or, he says, from another viewpoint, this nether part of us may be described as the antechamber of the inconscient, through which its formations rise into our waking or our subliminal being. When we sleep, and the surface physical part of us, which is in its first origin here, an output from the inconscient, relapses towards the originating inconscient, it enters into this subconscious element, antechamber or substratum, and there it finds the impressions of its past or persistent habits of mind and experiences, for all have left their mark in our subconscious part and have there a power of recurrence. In its effect on our waking self, this recurrence often takes the form of a reassertion of old habits, impulses dormant or suppressed, rejected elements of the nature. Or it comes up as some other not so easily recognizable, some peculiar disguised or subtle result of these suppressed or rejected, but not erased impulses or elements. So you can see none of this lapses into non-existent. It continues to be within us in a sense. In the dream consciousness, the phenomenon is an apparently fanciful construction, a composite of figures and movements built upon or around the buried impressions with a sense in them that escapes the waking intelligence because it has no clue to the subconscious system of significances. So there's that physical lapse into sleep, and then there's that dream consciousness which follows a different orientation and lapses into something which is more fanciful in its construction. One drawing from the past, from the present, half-digested things, and the other simply throwing up something built upon experience, but not based upon experience. After a time, this subconscious activity appears to sink back into complete inconscience, and we speak of this state as deep, dreamless sleep. So here, physical consciousness is diving into a state of dreamless sleep. Thence, we emerge again into the dream shallows or return to the waking surface. So once having gone through this cycle, what he's describing here is how we go to sleep and we drift down, most drift down into a deep slumber where we go into the subconscious, drawing nigh unto the inconscient at times. And what dreams we recollect from there will be born from our past experiences, etc., or sometimes from something fancifully concocted. And then we rise again back into the dream state from that dreamless period of slumber and or return directly to the waking surface. And this is what we understand about the sleep process so far. But he wants to challenge this now and invite us to a deeper understanding of what is possible in sleep. But in fact, in what we call dreamless sleep, we have gone into a profounder and denser layer of the subconscient, a state too involved, too immersed, or too obscure, dull, and heavy to bring to the surface its structures. And we are dreaming there, but unable to grasp or retain in the recording layer of subconscious these more obscure dream figures. So he's not denying that there's a state of dreamless sleep. He's saying that we don't recollect the dreams because we don't have the power to grasp them, but dream is continuing to play itself before some layer of our inner and remote consciousness. Or else it may be the part of our mind which still remains active in the sleep of the body has entered into the inner domains of our being, the subliminal mental, the subliminal vital, the subtle physical, and is there lost to all active connection with the surface parts of us. So dreamless sleep, in other words, can be a state in which we penetrate into the subliminal worlds, those worlds behind, and live and move in the realm of inner mind, the realm of the inner life world, the realm of the subtle and inner physical. If we are still, he says, in the nearer depths of these regions, the surface subconscient, which is our sleep-wakefulness, records something of what we experience in these depths. So there is something that's sort of asleep but awake. And if we're near the topmost region of that subconscient area, we catch that and carry it back as dream stuff to the waking life. But it records it in its own transcription, often marred by characteristic incoherences, and always, even when most coherent, deformed or cast into figures drawn from the world of waking experience. So, in other words, we may go into these great regions of the subliminal and have active experiences there, but we're not used to them. And in coming back to the waking life, if we're coming back through those subconscious moorings of which we're most familiar, then they take on the trappings that are known to us. And our experiences don't make sense. They come back, they're incoherent. We wonder, where have we been? It's not like, by the way, the deep subconscious where the physical falls into a kind of chaotic state near the bottom, near the inconscient. That also won't make sense. But this is almost too brilliant, too liminal to be able to make it through the known sensory data that we have to work with in that subconscious region near the surface. But he writes now, but if we have gone deeper inward, the record fails or cannot be recovered, and we have the illusion of dreamlessness. But the activity of the inner dream consciousness continues behind the veil of the now mute and inactive subconscious surface. This continued dream activity is revealed to us when we become more inwardly conscious. For then we get into connection with the heavier and deeper subconscious stratum and can be aware at the time or by a retracing or recovering through memory of what happened when we sank into these torpid depths. It is possible, too, to become conscious deeper within our subliminal selves, and we are then aware of experiences on other planes of our being, or even in supraphysical worlds to which sleep gives us a right of secret entry. A transcript of such experiences reaches us, but the transcriber here is not the subconscious, it is the subliminal, a greater dream builder. So this idea of becoming more powerfully aware is something, of course, that Mother traced out and was practicing with the sadhaks in the ashram from the late 20s on. You remember reading the conversations in 1929, which described this kind of work, and it continues on through personal and public discourses, well, public to the extent that others in the ashram were present with her. And Sri Aurobindo, of course, as we noted last time in his record of yoga, has kept a close record of what he was able to consciousness in extending his dream life into yogic activity. So when we sleep, we need not simply be asleep and allowing the body to rest. That is important. We want the body to rest. But we can develop a conscious power to enter into yogic advance in the sleep and dream realms, because they are real and reveal real parts of our being to us, important areas which we must know and become sovereign over. So if we work consciously, we can become more aware of our dreams. This is another secret. The more conscious we are in our waking life, the more conscious we will become in our sleep and dream life. The walls begin to thin among all these apparent obscure divisions. Sri Aurobindo continues, if the subliminal thus comes to the front in our dream consciousness, there is sometimes an activity of our subliminal intelligence. Dream becomes a series of thoughts, often strangely or vividly figured. Problems are solved, which our waking consciousness could not solve. Warnings, premonitions, indications of the future, veridical, means truth-telling. Veridical dreams replace the normal subconscious incoherence. There can come also a structure of symbol images, some of a mental character, some of a vital nature. The former are precise in their figures, clear in their significance. The latter are often complex and baffling to our waking consciousness. But if we can seize the clue, they reveal their own sense and peculiar system of coherence. Finally, there can come to us the records of happenings seen or experienced by us on other planes of our own being or of universal being into which we enter. These have sometimes, like the symbolic dreams, a strong bearing on our own inner and outer life or the life of others, reveal elements of our or their mental being and life being, or disclose influences on them of which our waking self is totally ignorant. But sometimes they have no such bearing and are purely records of other organized systems of consciousness, independent of our physical existence. The subconscious dreams constitute the bulk of our most ordinary sleep experience, and they are those which we usually remember. But sometimes the subliminal builder is able to impress our sleep consciousness sufficiently to stamp his activities on our waking memory. If we develop our inner being, live more inwardly than most men do, then the balance is changed and a larger dream consciousness opens before us. Our dreams can take on a subliminal and no longer a subconscious character and can assume a reality and significance. So these ranges of the subliminal may have application to our life here actually, may tell us about things, or we may have entered into realms which have no apparent connection to Earth, and we come to know the truths and the forces of those planes of being. They may have application in future growth, but they have no application in the here and now so far as our physical shell is concerned. And again, conscious life develops the inner being and greatens the sleepscape to us. That aspect of our being becomes more important, not simply something that we slough off when we come back to wakefulness, but something that we can draw upon and remember and drink deeply from the sap which we found there and gain an inner nourishment from it. And that way, our growing consciousness uses every part of our aspect. If we spend a third of our life in sleep and in dream, it ought to have meaning. It ought to empower us in some way that we can incorporate into our conscious life. And if these worlds that we contact when we are asleep, the inner mind, the inner life, the inner and subtle physical, speak to us about dimensions of the cosmos into which we normally have no access when we're awake, but can have powerful access when we sleep, and can then import those energies into our waking life. Again, drilling holes in the walls that seem to separate us from the subliminal worlds. He writes, "It is even possible to become wholly conscious in sleep and follow throughout from beginning to end or over large stretches the stages of our dream experience. It is found that then we are aware of ourselves passing from state after state of consciousness to a brief period of luminous and peaceful dreamless rest, which is the true restorer of the energies of the waking nature, and then returning by the same way to the waking consciousness." This was something that the mother was practicing when she was a teenager. This had become a well-practiced science to her. He writes, "It is normal, as we thus pass from state to state, to let the previous experiences slip away from us, and return only the more vivid or those nearest to the waking surface are remembered, but this can be remedied. A greater retention is possible, or the power can be developed of going back in memory from dream to dream, from state to state, till the whole is once more before us. A coherent knowledge of sleep life, though difficult to achieve or to keep established, is possible. Our subliminal self is not, like our surface physical being, an outcome of the energy of the inconscient. It is a meeting place of the consciousness that emerges from below by evolution and the consciousness that has descended from above for involution." So the subliminal is a junction of the higher and the lower being, personally and cosmically. There is in it an inner mind, an inner vital being of ourselves, an inner or subtle physical being larger than our outer being in nature. This inner existence is the concealed origin of almost all in our surface self that is not a construction of the first inconscient world energy or a natural developed functioning of our surface consciousness, or a reaction of it to impacts from the outside universal nature. And even in this construction These functionings, these reactions, the subliminal takes part and exercises on them a considerable influence. There is here a consciousness which has a power of direct contact with the universal, unlike the mostly indirect contacts which our surface being maintains with the universe through the sense mind and the senses. So if we want to act upon ourselves in a powerful way, or upon the world in a powerful way, then to become aware of this subliminal world is that which renders that so. It is there that the empowerment lies. This is where the greater mind energies lie, where the greater powers of prana, of the life realm, lie. There is here a consciousness which has a power of direct contact with the universal, unlike the mostly indirect contacts which our surface being maintains with the universe through the sense mind and the senses. Sorry, I read that a second time. There are here inner senses, a subliminal sight, touch, hearing. But these subtle senses are rather channels of the inner being's direct consciousness of things than its informants. The subliminal is not dependent on its senses for its knowledge. They only give a form to its direct experience of objects. They do not, so much as in waking mind, convey forms of objects for the mind's documentation or as the starting point or basis for an indirect constructive experience. The subliminal has the right of entry into the mental and vital and subtle physical planes of the universal consciousness. It is not confined to the material plane and the physical world. It possesses means of communication with the worlds of being, which the descent towards involution created in its passage, and with all corresponding planes or worlds that may have arisen or been constructed to serve the purpose of the re-ascent from inconscience to superconscience. So the inner sensory powers which belong to the subliminal are different than the senses which are extensions of our physical waking life. They have greater power to deliver verity, truth to us. They need not simply go out gathering this and that to bring back. They are extensions of a power of knowledge themselves and don't deliver something back to the waking mind, which then have to be assembled into something which is a simulacrum of knowledge. The subliminal is capable of going out and getting something that is real and of substance. And it can work in either the involving ranges of the being, in other words, purely in the inner mind world, purely in the world of the inner vital, purely in the subtle physical world, or in those elements in which they exist in the evolving portion. So they have a power of interaction through our receptive vehicle on any and all of the planes of being, so that up and down the cosmic chain of being, the cosmic planes being established from above downwards. Remember how the cosmic tree rests with its roots above, extending its branches down below? So it is that all the greater realms of our being have involved themselves into the condensed form of the unconscious rising into matter, or we should say rather, matter is the first formation of the evolving power of consciousness as it rises from the inconscient and then forms these worlds, all of them an expression and accessible through the great subliminal staircase. And so as we awaken to that subliminal being by making sleep and dream conscious, we can use those powers to scale up and scale down act exclusively in the inner realms or bring pointed action to bear in the evolutionary realm that we inhabit now, making matter live, making matter aware, making matter evolve soul powers further. It is into this large realm of interior existence that our mind and vital being retire when they withdraw from the surface activities, whether by sleep or inward drawn concentration, or by the inner plunge of trance. So in this last note, Sri Aurobindo draws some correspondence among these different powers. The power of sleep, the power of taking your consciousness inside and focusing it on a point, or plunging into a seemingly all-obliterating trance. There is a kinship in each one of these. And so Sri Aurobindo will draw upon that in coming pages. So there is indeed more to come. So I think this is likely a good place to put our bookmarks for this week, here in the midst of the cosmic illusion. And maybe we're dreaming, maybe we're not. Let's come to Savitri again tonight. And tonight we're in Book 2, the Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, and we're in Canto 5, The Godheads of the Little Life. Impenetrable, a mystery recondite, is the vast plan of which we are part. Its harmonies are discords to our view, because we know not the great theme they serve. Inscrutable work the cosmic agencies. Only the fringe of a wide surge we see. Our instruments have not that greater light. Our will tunes not with the eternal will. Our heart's sight is too blind and passionate. Impotent to share in nature's mystic tact, inapt to feel the pulse and core of things, our reason cannot sound life's mighty sea, and only counts its waves and scans its foam. It knows not whence these motions touch and pass. It sees not whither sweeps the hurrying flood. Only it strives to canalize its powers and hopes to turn its course to human ends. But all its means come from the inconscient's store. Unseen here act dim, huge world energies, and only trickles and currents are our share. Our mind lives far off from the authentic light, catching at little fragments of the truth in a small corner of infinity. Our lives are inlets of an ocean's force. Our conscious movements have sealed origins, but with those shadowy seats no converse hold. No understanding binds our comrade parts. Our acts emerge from a crypt our minds ignore. Our deepest depths are ignorant of themselves. Even our body is a mystery shop. As our earth's roots lurk screened below our earth, so lie unseen our roots of mind and life. Our springs are kept close hid beneath, within. Our souls are moved by powers behind the wall. In the subterranean reaches of the spirit, a puissance acts and recks not what it means. Using unthinking monitors and scribes, it is the cause of what we think and feel. The troglodytes of the subconscious mind, ill-trained, slow, stammering interpreters, only of their small tasks routine-aware, and busy with the record in our cells, concealed in the subliminal secrecies met an obscure occult machinery, capture the mystic Morse whose measured lilt transmits the messages of the cosmic force. A whisper falls into life's inner ear and echoes from the dun subconscious caves. Speech leaps, thought quivers, the heart vibrates, the will answers, and tissue and nerve obey the call. Our lives translate these subtle intimacies. All is the commerce of a secret power. So, thank you again for your patience. Jai Ma, Namaste.